Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm bringing back Brad Kearns. He is the host of the Be Rad Podcast. He is an athlete by nature. He's got a record for speed golfing. He's a triathlete. He's also a track and field high jumper, and he is hilarious. And we're going to be talking all about his ultimate morning exercise routine and how you can develop your own. He's got a program. You can kind of follow it and create your own exercise routine in the morning. And if you pay attention to my Instagram, Dr. Janine Krause, you will see some of his exercises because I was really drawn to this when he showed me his new program. And so I definitely want to share it with you guys because I think there's a lot to it in terms of opening up your hips and getting your like hips and core moving for the day. So without any further ado, let's jump into the podcast and talk with Brad. Hey there, health junkies. I have Brad or B-Rad Kearns on again today, and we're going to be talking all about his morning routine program. This thing's game changer for you. You have to stay tuned here because this is going to blow your mind in terms of what he's got going on. It's the best way to start your day. So Brad, welcome back to the Health Fix Podcast.
Oh my gosh, what an honor to be back. I love connecting with you. Talking about your positional parasympathetic breathing all the time. I wrote it into the course material of the Primal Fitness Coach certification we've been working on, and I demonstrated it on a video. Hopefully I did it right. Doesn't seem too hard, Janine, but for listeners, oh my gosh, this thing has been so great for me after intense workouts where you just take some time to lie down, elevate your feet, and then get into some nice calm nasal diaphragmatic breathing. And when I get up, you know, I think you said 5 to 10 minutes. And sometimes it's like 20 minutes because I'm in my backyard in the sun. And it's like, I need this paired with my workout. It has a profound effect on just bringing you back down rather than kind of having that workout linger and you're in a stress hormone state instead of really coming back to chill.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You can take as much time as you want. You know, I kind of started at 5 because I feel like you need at least 5 minutes to kind of one, breathe your heart rate down back, you know, close to your baseline heart rate, but also just because it's, you know, it's just enough time to get that breathing. Like you're saying, get that breathing, get yourself in the zone, but you could stay there half hour if you want. I don't care. Stay there all day. You might need it, you know?
Yeah, I remember I used to go down, I was a professional triathlete for 9 years way back when, and I trained, you know, with a small group or by myself in Los Angeles or Northern Cal, my two areas where I was based, but I'd often drive down to San Diego, which at the time was like the hotbed, the world headquarters of triathlon, and guys would come over from Europe and spend the winter there. And there was a lot of guys just based there. And so there'd be these workouts with like 80 people on a bike ride going up the coast and 57 people on the trail run. It was just competitive and like really intense. Okay. And I'd go to the swim workouts and they were, you know, pretty challenging and everybody's fighting hard in whatever lane. But the thing that was different between my workouts and theirs was after the workout, they'd go over to the spa area and sit there and talk trash and relax and enjoy the sun for like 30 or 45 minutes. There was no rush to go off to a job or, you know, whatever the average triathlete who's so busy and squeezing in workouts left and right. And it just reminded me like, hey, you go and work hard, but then if you can take some time to, you know, treat your body right and allow the workout to sink in, it makes all the difference. And that's what the professional athletes represented there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of us don't realize, you know, you don't have to be a professional athlete to take the recovery thing seriously. I think for a lot of us, we're like, oh, I'm not at that level. I don't need to do these things. I'm like, wait a minute, what is your day, you know, your day-to-day life is a marathon in and of itself. It's like a triathlon. Mm. You know, you might not be doing the swim, the bike, you know, the run, but, you know, picking the kids up from school, going from one place to the other, you know, doing your Zoom meetings, this could be your own triathlon.
Well, we also are in this indulgent age of hyperconnectivity, constant digital stimulation, potential for distraction and instant gratification. I just talked to the best-selling author, Dr. Anna Lemke, author of Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence is the subtitle. And she was talking about how, you know, we're so wired to be entertained and stimulated and prompt these dopamine triggers that are everywhere. There's a long list of them. The mobile device is up there really high, but sugar's on the list, and video games and pornography and gambling and all kinds of things that'll, you know, be to your detriment when you go to excess. But we're trickling these in all the time. So we're watching streaming video at nighttime, and then we're having a scoop of ice cream, and then we're texting somebody while we're watching the streaming entertainment, and it can get to be too much. And so this downtime is kind of the forgotten aspect of modern life, which you know, we need to recognize it, especially if we have fitness athletic goals. Then you're really piling stress on top of a baseline level of high stress life.
Absolutely. So one of the things that a lot of people ask me about, they're like, "Doc, you know, like you just said, you know, how do I get all these things in? How do I find time between my scrolling on social, you know, and eating my ice cream to squeeze in these routines? Like what kind of routines do I need?" And you are a big fan of the morning routine, much like I am, and the evening routine and the post-workout routine, like we've talked about now. And of course, we're going to be talking about Brad's new course here, guys. It's a comprehensive guide to developing the ultimate morning exercise routine. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, how do you start your day? You know, what do I do? What can I do to get the most bang for my buck? And I think you've got it nailed here. So can you tell folks a little bit like behind the inspiration and give us a little bit of details of what they might find within this ultimate morning program you got going on?
Yeah. Thanks, Janine, for the tea up there. And one thing I'd like to start with is to like, let me take a step back from this jock personality that I inhabit. You know, I'm an old time professional triathlete. I'm still competing and I'm calling attention to all those things. Hey, there's my podcast logo in the background of me jumping over a high jump bar. So, you know, fitness has been my life, athletic competition, and competing at the highest level as a professional. And not many people can relate to that, nor do they want to, or should they. And so, as a regular guy, you know, living my life and having all manner of responsibilities and things to do and being busy and having a mobile device of my own that I'm free to look at anytime and be distracted by, I realized, you know, here later in life, I'm not a professional competitor anymore, but the days can get away from us. And so I have no problem, you know, my workout schedule is not one of my areas, needs to improve areas in my life. That might be budgeting my credit card expenses. It's in the needs to improve area, but I'm staying fit. I got no complaints, but I realized that the workout schedule and the training schedule that one follows is great. Hey, you got goals, you're a tennis player, you're going to hit some balls at 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. or whatever. You go to the gym, you do your class. But beyond that, there's another level where we're obligated to achieve a more movement-oriented lifestyle. And many experts are saying that it's right up there, just as important, maybe more important than adhering to a devoted fitness regimen. And so, you know, we all are obligated to get up from the screen, take a break, walk around the block, race up the stairs, do a micro workout, things like that are coming into popularity now, and realizing that it's not just about showing up on the bike seat at 6 a.m. for your spin class and then going off to your day of, you know, luxury, laziness, indulgence, whatever. In my case, the real motivation was that I would go and do my high intensity sprint workouts around once a week, or a high jump practice, which is pretty jarring to the body. And as a guy in the 55 plus division, not too easy to recover from, right? And so for many years, actually, these sprint workouts would beat me up, or jump workouts, or both. And so I'd be, you know, my calves would be burning the next day. I'd be limping around the house. I'd do just a very bland workout, like jog for 15 minutes. And that was my day. And then the next day I'd have to do something small again. And I realized, you know, these workouts are too stressful from what all the other fitness baseline that I've established. Because maybe I'm going in and lifting weights in the gym, but that's not helping my legs absorb the pounding of sprinting. Maybe I'm jogging, which is keeping me fit and it's keeping me getting my cardio, but it doesn't directly, you know, contribute to making me more resilient. And so that's why these workouts were beating me up so much. So I thought, what if I did something every single day that approximated the challenge of a high intensity session and improved the flexibility, mobility, joint connective tissue resiliency, things like that. And so I kicked this thing into action in early 2017, maybe late 2016. I didn't know I was going to have a 5-year streak without missing a day. So it's going strong, not a single day. And we'll talk about that a little more too. But what I did was I just threw in some different exercises. Some of them I made up, some of them I learned from experts, and I put together this little sequence of moves for my legs. And it was like on the ground. So I'm getting core stimulation. I'm doing leg circles and frog legs and kicking my hamstring up, you know, as a nice dynamic stretch, just good solid body movement to start my day. They're all safe because I'm, you know, on laying on the mat for the first sequence. And that was a really great breakthrough. Because I realized that I was now better able to handle the actual formal workouts that I put my body through. And I was not waking up like an athlete anymore, which especially an old time athlete, you wake up and you're limping and shuffling around until you get the blood flowing or the people need to go get their coffee and then they're awake and all that kind of thing. So at the conclusion of my routine, I always felt better. I felt immediately alert and sharp and my muscles were loose and fluid. And hey, many times I would take the opportunity to go dovetail that into a workout. So, hey, now I'm out the door and I'm going for a 30-minute jog with my dog. Now I'm headed over to the gym to lift weights. Now I'm going straight into a sprinting or jumping workout, feeling mobile and loose and resilient. But most days I'm not doing that. So I'm going off and getting busy in front of the screen, but at least I knocked out this baseline level of daily movement to promote flexibility, mobility, balance, injury prevention, all the big ticket items that we want to work on.
You know, I think what you've got going on, of course, I checked it out and guys, it's amazing and very cost effective. And what I also found is that, you know, it's like most of us end up throughout the day, you know, we'll get started if we don't get our morning routine going and we go sit in front of the screen, right? Because a lot of people are working at home now. People just get stiffer and stiffer. Now they try to go to the evening spin class or go out for a jog or even a walk. I had a friend just the other day went out on a walk and she somehow strained her Achilles and we can't even figure out what in the heck happened. And it's gotta be from just so much sedentary, you know, lifestyle and not greasing the joints. I feel like the concept of greasing the joints and greasing the spine and greasing just like every area is such a great way for just blood flow in general. Like you said, it doesn't matter if you're going to go sprint or you're going to go just sit in the office. At least you grease some joints. I'm kind of like maybe the routine, you know, in a perfect world for me might be like 3 times some days just cause. Mm.
Right. You do your little minute sequence, then back to your busy day.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
So obviously you've probably done some of the research on the joint mobilizations and things of that nature. And one of the ones I really like to talk about is the hips, because it seems to me if the more folks are sitting these days, the more those hips are locked up and the more injuries we have. Is that kind of what you've seen to be the standard across the board in terms of what you're seeing in folks?
Hips, glutes not being activating or being resilient because they're placed in that inappropriate position with sitting. I have all kinds of problems with my feet, calves, plantar fasciitis recurring and coming and going for, you know, years, even decades. And I think a lot of it's relating to kind of this all or nothing approach to fitness where, hey, you get me warmed up at 4 p.m. and headed over to the pickup basketball game. Looks like a pretty impressive athlete there, but let's check on that person the next morning when they're hobbling around. And it always felt weird to me. And I know when I was a pro triathlete and giving my heart and soul to this sport and training at the highest level I could, it was extremely unhealthy at the extreme. And so I walked around like an old man most of the time. And if I was asked to carry, you know, some sandbags over into position to help the elderly neighbor avoid flooding during the rainstorm, the next day I woke up and I had a sore lower back because I picked up a 25-pound sandbag and walked 20 feet with it. You know, I was a delicate little flower that was good for one thing, and that was going in a straight line with swimming, biking, and running. And I knew back then that it was kind of a distortion of what we should be considering as a fit human. And so I've tried for the rest of my adult life to broaden my functional capacity and actually go and lift a weight instead of look at it, and then get into my recent passions of high jumping and sprinting, which is so disparate from being a triathlete. But I feel like healthier in so many ways, because it doesn't have that chronic stress on the body and the hormones of getting out there and pedaling for hours and hours and then running for an extra hour and just doing that extreme stuff. So that's all fine and dandy to have that fitness program in place. But then I'm trying to look at, well, you know, what can I do to make this body even more resilient and be able to have more fun and a more varied fitness experience without the drawbacks of straining something on a walk. I actually tore my meniscus on a walk down the block with the dog back when I was 39 years old. And I raced home and I was on the internet and I found some information that said males around age 40 will spontaneously tear the meniscus with no known attribution. And it's just from the aging of the, you know, the cartilage or whatever over time from the athletic background. And I was like, wait, I'm only 39, man. This is, this is bullshit. But you know, whatever precipitated that obviously was, you know, a factor, but it is kind of ridiculous to realize how fragile we are, even though we're, you know, get a high score in the fitness or athletic competitor category.
You know, I think you make a good point about that, because a lot of people who are fit, I find that they will hurt themselves either on the most basic things or while doing yard work, carrying buckets of things, you know, sandbags, you know, pulling weeds seems to be a hot topic these days, being spring and all, and folks being coming in bent over. I saw that last week in my office, a couple of folks bent over going, you got to get me straight again. You know, I can't get moving. So, you know, I think it really does, you know, it lends to a really good point to really start thinking about, like, not really just greasing your joints for the day, greasing your joints for life's adventures and really kind of opening up the day that way. It's almost like, instead of, you know, for me, I'll admit it over and over again, I'm not great at meditation. And so a morning routine of mobility would be much better meditation for me.
Yeah. There's some wide ranging benefits way beyond just helping you with your fitness goals and raising your fitness base for formal workouts. And that's what I've discovered is that it is a form of meditative experience, because when I go and hit the deck and do my sequence, I'm counting 40 hamstring raises, leg kickouts, 20 frogs, followed by 20 scissors, followed by 20 forward mountain climbers, followed by 20 with the reverse. And if I lose count, my rule is I have to start over. And so you can't really be multitasking in your head when you are counting through the sequences and trying to execute good form. And some of my stuff is now escalated to what many people might be considered a high degree of difficulty. So I'm working some, you know, leg swings that aren't easy. And so, of course, when you do something difficult, you're totally focused on it. You're not, you know, in this easy breezy state like you might be if you're walking the dog around the block, which is fine. You can daydream and all that. But this is, I think, has meditative benefits because of the focusing that's entailed when you are, you're putting yourself through some reasonably challenging exercises.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you get in that zone like that when you're narrowing. I just went to a talk two nights ago with the podcast guy, Andrew Huberman, the Huberman Lab. And he was talking about narrowing your focus on something. And I'm like, I think for a lot of people, when you are doing certain exercises that maybe you're counting or it's a repetitive thing and you're just learning it or trying to master it, that narrowing of the focus might even be enough to get you into parasympathetic mode to kind of like take that, you know, cortisol down just right off in the morning.
Well, I think we also have, now we're bombarded as soon as whatever we wake up with stimulation and potential for distraction and instant gratification rather than our highest goals and priorities. So if I can prove to myself that every single day you will find me on that mat soon after I wake up, now I improve my ability to focus and exert discipline in all other areas of life. And again, I want people to step back from this reaction that, oh, well, this guy's a fitness guy. Of course he can go and do his workout every morning. But it's not really about that. So I'm just as susceptible as anyone else to kind of falling off track and missing my to-do list and my most important objectives. Oh, I was supposed to work on my book today, but I forgot. And I did this, that instead, because these emails came in. But if you can, you know, prioritize yourself and your commitment to being a healthy, fit person with mobile joints and greasing the connective tissue first thing in the morning, it really does say a lot. And it shows, oh my gosh, probably setting a good example. If kids are around looking at this crazy stuff that happens every morning, or anyone that you can influence, I love to talk about it because it's been a big life changer for me, even as a fitness person, to say I can do something every single day. And it's now like transitioned, or very quickly transitioned, into the category of habit. And there's habit. And then there's, wow, you're super motivated. You're an athlete. How do you do it? That's impressive. And that's kind of a different thing where, you know, how do you push yourself to ride your bike so far? This is where I don't even think about my motivation level every day. I don't wake up and go, am I motivated to do this today? It's not about that. It's about breaking through to put a healthy habit into place. Mm-hmm. And then the more healthy habits you can stack up, the less susceptible you are to distraction, instant gratification, indulgence, rather than, you know, doing something rich and meaningful, making a contribution to the world around you. And I think that's a big issue today, more so than ever. And right there in the same category is like Dr. Kelly Starrett. He's a big fitness and injury rehabilitation guy. But on my podcast with him, he spent most of the time talking about plugging your phone in outside of your bedroom. And I'm like, that's funny, because here's the world's leading expert on, how to alleviate tennis elbow with a strategic. And he's talking about all the other stuff and how with his kids, they park a mile from school, little kids, when they're in elementary school, and they walk it in. So if you're saying, oh, I can't walk my kids to school, it's too far. There's ways where you can build in these habits and routines, and all of a sudden, boom, it's a habit every time. And you don't have to think about it or ask yourself whether you're motivated. Even the exercises themselves, Janine, I don't judge them as easy or hard. I just do them. And some days my abdomen's burning because I'm recovering from a difficult workout or an event, and I still have to do it. And it's way more difficult than it is usually. And if someone stopped and asked me and put a gun to my head and said, do you really want to do this today? And I'd be like, no, I'd rather skip it. But I don't even get to that point where I have to ask myself, do you want to skip it? Because it's locked in. James Clear, Atomic Habits, number one best-selling book about habits. Mm-hmm. He brings up this silly example of asking people to floss one tooth if you want to get them into the habit of flossing. And, oh, I always forget that. No, I haven't really been flossing lately. The dentist is scolding me again. And the question comes up, could you frickin' floss one tooth after a meal? Yes or no? And if you can buy into this mindset, that's actually a worthwhile approach to building habits, where the bar, the barrier of entry is so low that it's ridiculous, so much so that you laugh. I saw you smile when I said one tooth. You're like, come on. But it's highly, highly effective from the world's leading experts and researchers. I would laugh too about flossing one tooth, and why not just do the whole mouth, which oftentimes that will happen if you commit and take it very seriously, that it is now time for you to floss one tooth after meals because you're not good at flossing. And so let me transition directly into this morning exercise routine, because I don't want someone to see the promo video and go, well, that's way out of my league. This guy's fit. He's doing all this core stuff. I couldn't even last. Fine. But listen, if you can start with a commitment of a 3-minute sequence of movement, exercise, whatever it might be. The yoga sun salute experience is one thing that I offer in the course, which is really basic and simple. I have one even simpler than that called the gentle skeleton setting routine, where I just do some thoracic mobility and then very gentle reaching my arms for the sky and sweeping them down, something that anyone could do. And if you want to cut the video off right there at the 3-minute and 20-second mark and say, that's what I will do every day. I can still deal with my kids when they wake up and then, you know, the alarm bells sound and it's time to jump into hectic, high stress modern life. But if you can build something into habit of an appropriate, easy level of starting point, that's when you have a chance to build momentum. And until a habit is formed, you can't improve it. That's a quote. I don't know if that's the exact quote, but it's like, duh, but we got to think about that, because if we're sitting here going, yeah, I signed up for the gym in January 1st on that special, but I haven't been going much. Well, then there's no habit. There's nothing to improve there because it's not there yet. But if you can make the smallest commitment, like I will at least go to the gym once a month, then you're into habit, and then you can improve it and strive for twice a month. Or in my example, if you're going to commit 3.5 minutes to a morning exercise routine, let's talk in 30 days and see if you might want to bump it up to 5. Go for the fiver because you are attracted, or these new exercises appeal to you and you want to add them. We can talk more about that template too.
Yeah. No, I'm fascinated by the small increments, because I think for a lot of folks who are just getting started, it can be overwhelming to think, you know, like, am I going to be sore from doing 15 minutes of a morning routine? You know, am I going to be sore from 3? Am I going to hurt myself? You know, a lot of people will ask me those kind of things, even just from warm-up things. So I think it is good to take it easy and roll in. So yeah, tell us a little bit about the exercises in the 3-minute sequence for folks.
So you have to start slow and easy, but you also have to take it very seriously. And this reminds me of, you know, people in our space, right? We've come to this ancestral health or progressive health movement. And if you stack up the list of the top 100 podcast hosts and authors of books on the subject, a lot of them arrived here via pain and suffering. And so that motivation kicked in because they're fighting for their lives. So they were just exasperated with health breakdown. And that's kind of sad that that's what it takes to get us to wake up. You know, you go to see the presentation, well, I was diagnosed with cancer and then I changed my diet and I healed. It's like, oh, that's great. You know, but let's try to preempt this decline and do something good for ourselves before we're obligated to, by, you know, medical release forms that they want you to, you know, flex your knee every day after the major surgery or replacement. Okay. So, if that appeals to you, that you want to improve your life in a way that's really doable and simple and not stressful and not aggravating, then that's why I mentioned this 3.5-minute commitment. Now, what's happened sometimes at people that I've worked with and family, friends, loved ones, is we'll get this initial buy-in. And then I'll say, how's that going 30 days later? Oh, geez. I mean, I do it most days. It's pretty cool. That's not what we're talking here. We're talking about building a habit where it means something to you and you're serious about it and you commit. And so that's why I mentioned my streak. It means a lot to me. It's important. And I like conveying the idea in public because now I'm accountable to anyone who's listening and wondering if this guy's telling the truth. I am. It's no joke. And sometimes it's not easy. I have pictures on my Instagram of me doing the mini band sequence in an airport gate, you know, because that was, I didn't have time to go through the whole thing, but I will get it done. And once in a while, it'll be not first thing in the morning because we're heading off to the airport, but it gets done every day. And again, I don't judge it. I don't go, oh, geez, I have to, you know, it's the drudgery of going back out there. If that thought tries to float into my head, which, like I said before, if it's tough and I'm sore and I'm tired, it might float into my head, but I just discount it and get the work done. Tony Robbins is talking about his fascination for cold plunging. He's got a custom facility at all 7 of his luxury homes around the world. And he's a big enthusiast and for the psychological benefits. And he says, this is an example of my mind telling my body what to do, not to hesitate, but to act. And if we can imagine how that might benefit our lives, if we are in control and telling our body what to do without any arguing or negotiating.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that seems to be the ultimate goal, right? To be able to have that mastery over your subconscious mind. And, you know, for so many people, it is a struggle. And I think, you know, a lot of people, and myself included, for a very long time in my life, really didn't have the concept that I was in control of my life. I thought things were happening to me, not for me. And I really didn't get the fact that, oh, wait, I can choose to do these things to help myself. It's not that I can't, you know, like I have a choice. It's so weird. But I think a lot of people do get stuck in that realm of like, oh, wait, I want to get healthy. I want to get started with these things, but you know, my kids, they need me or this, the, you know, like there's all of these different reasons, but having something that's doable, having something that means something to you. And that was what you had mentioned that really stuck with me is something that means to you, having a purpose for it. And maybe even taking the whole word of exercise out of it. And you have morning routine. I noticed there's, you know, it's not really linked to exercise. It's morning routine. And I'm wondering if you chose that for a reason for the old subconscious up there.
Good point. Because really anything will be tremendously beneficial. And there's morning routine experts. It's like a hot topic, you know, that the guy, I make fun of Jim Quick, the brain training expert, but he has wonderful information. I'm just having fun here, but he has a video where his morning routine consists of, it's either 17 or 21 things. So first it's the green tea with the fresh leaves. Then it's the gratitude journal. Then it's going outside and doing some meditation. Then it's a cold shower and then you rinse off and you do this and then you do that. And it's like, come on, dude, you know, most people, I don't see any screaming kids around there wondering why the waffles aren't popping out of the toaster. So let's get reasonable here with something that feels and resonates with the person individually, like this could work into my life and I don't have to answer to anybody else. So if your morning commitment is to wake up, leash the dog up and walk around the block, that's pretty awesome. And you owe that to the dog. We were going to talk about that because we were talking about that's dogs Lucy. Offline.
We got to talk about Lucy.
High five on the dogs. Yeah. Now, if that's a commitment, and you're doing it every day, maybe at that halfway point, you can stop at the bench and do some 10 deep squats, and that gets folded in. And the only reason I chose these vigorous or you know, certain level of exercises is because I think that's our really big void in modern life is all that stillness, that inactivity, that putting the muscles and joints in inappropriate locked in positions. So I'm like, hey, let's handle this. And I'm going to maybe put that, me personally, in front of my obligation to write in my gratitude journal, which is also highly, highly ranked. That's wonderful. I love people that promote that. Hey, you want to piggyback that on to a few exercises? That's great. But I'm going for the kill here saying, hey, this is a crisis trauma center and we got to do something about this. Otherwise our hand will be shaking. We won't be able to write in the journal because we got too much arthritis or whatever joke, but pick what works for you. And put something together, ideally physical movement. And then if you can get outdoors into direct light, I didn't say sunlight, I said direct light, like Huberman corrects this, right? Because if it's a cloudy overcast day in the Pacific Northwest, you still get tremendous circadian and hormonal benefit from exposing your eyes to direct light. Doesn't count through the glass window of the car or the home. And so in Lake Tahoe, when it's very cold in the winter, and I try to get outside and make it a cold exposure session, but on those extremely cold days or when there's snow, I will open up the slider and do my exercise routine on the very edge so that I am getting direct light, but I'm still in the house getting it cold. So it's outdoors, ideally. Physical movement, Brad recommends that highly. But if it's going to be walking the dog and writing three passages in your gratitude journal, and that's your morning routine, congratulations. And guess what? That is, you're going to leverage that so beautifully into all kinds of other things throughout the day. And that begs a follow-up question I get from a lot of people. Is it okay if I do this thing at noon instead at my break? Because mornings are pretty hectic. And the answer is yes, it's okay, because anything you believe and commit to is okay. But I'm also, besides making a strong recommendation for exercise, I also want to make a strong recommendation for the very first thing you do before doing what 84% of Americans do by a recent Adweek survey. Do you know what that is? We do the same thing, 84% of people.
I'm wondering if it's drinking coffee.
Reaching for the mobile device.
Oh, for the phone. Yeah.
The very first thing upon awakening. Somewhere around half of those people are reaching while still in bed. In other words, most of us plug the phone in so near that we can reach for it. So we're getting that EMF all night, and then we can reach for it without getting out of bed. And we want to counter that disastrous trend. Psychologist Dr. Nicole Benders-Hadi says that when you bring your brain into that reactive mode where you're scrolling through social media or text messages or whatever, it's very difficult to extricate from that type of mindset into the more desirable high level thinking, strategic reasoning, you know, starting your day, planning your day, thinking of your to-do list, looking at high priority items. You leave that and now you're into a reaction, reaction, reaction. And you can't take it back very easily. So, I also kind of tout this as sort of an incentive, because guess what I get to do when I finish my morning routine? I make myself a drink, a beverage. I make my own kombucha. It's delicious. I mix carbonated water, mineral water with the kombucha. And I purposely don't drink beforehand, even though I probably should, because I want to have some incentives and some rewards when I finish. So when this routine is over, I get to go drink a water. I'll soon after make a smoothie or make a bowl of fruit, my new kick on that. And guess what? Hey, maybe I can reach for my phone and look at my dopamine triggering text messages or social media stream. But at least I earned it in a way. And that's a huge difference from, you know, laying in bed, reaching over and wondering what direction life is going to take you. Just like you mentioned, Janine, like you realize one day you had a choice to go do things for your health rather than being a victim of all these setbacks, illnesses, whatever people are dealing with, you know, unfairness, right?
Right, right. Staring at phones. I can't believe I didn't even think of the phone. It's because the phone has been out of my room for so long. I think I've like brainwashed myself that I don't even, actually I lose my phone more often than not because I try to stay away, but it's nice. You know, it's part of life. We got to get on social, you got to do the things, you know, if you have a business, that's the way it goes. Got to keep educating people. That's my thing. I social is teaching for me.
Yeah. And I think I'm trying to remind myself frequently of how freaking awesome it is to live in this advanced technological age. I love the driving navigation. And I remember the days, because half of my life and half of my time driving or whatever section, you had the folded maps and you had to pull over on the side of the road and you were lost and frustrated and late. And so we have so many benefits if we can use technology to our advantage. I bring up the map because not a lot of people are abusing the GPS map and wasting time all day. You know, it's like the opposite. It's a total wonderful innovation. Same with connecting via social media, but you want to be in the driver's seat and be proactive so that you're going to say, I'm going to take some entertainment / education time and scroll through my social media or go and look at my three favorite people and what they've posted rather than, you know, being in that reactive mode. So you can use it to your advantage and make your life more efficient and all that great stuff. And that part, sometimes we forget because we're just slamming it left and right. Like, yeah, social media and technology and email is so annoying. It distracts me all day long. It's like, yeah, how about stamps and lines at the post office and going back to the old days? No, thanks.
Lines at the post office. Oh, that's one of my, even to this day, every time I go, there's still a line.
But it's an interesting phenomenon. Yeah.
I think there's less workers. That's my guess at stage of the game. Who knows? Oh my gosh, Brad, we've gone through all kinds of things. We've talked all about the morning routine. We've kind of given folks a really good preview and everything to kind of help check it out. Of course, it's over at your website, Brad, KEARNS.com/ I think it's morning routine. If I had it correct there, folks want to check it out, or morning exercise, I believe I've got on one. Morning dash routine. There you go. Got it right now that I looked at it. So I think I would love to have you tell folks one thing. If they're going, okay, I'm on the fence, I'm a little bit not sure if I need to do a morning routine or if I should just grab my phone, get all fired up about life, get my coffee and just stay in the cortisol panic mode. Mm. What would be the one thing, if they could choose one thing to get them like the toes in the water to get them started and kind of like eased in so that they're going to definitely want to grab your course? What would be the toe dipping in thing that we can get them addicted so that they're like, yes, I have to have this course.
You mean like an actual exercise?
Perhaps. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Something like that.
I think that, that license to do something that's very short in duration, but can have a huge impact has got to be appealing to everyone. I know we're all pressed on time. I know what it's like to have kids in the house and school bells ringing and being, and, you know, having literally not enough time to do this or do that. I totally appreciate that excuse. that rationale, where I'm also really big or really against someone blathering that just wake up earlier and then you'll be more productive. And I think it's a joke when I see that type of promotion, and it's very prominent. It's very cool to be the badass and show, your wake up time and brag about all the stuff that you accomplished before while everyone else was sleeping, and possibly bring in that inferiority and that comparison that we suffer from when we indulge in social media. So I never, ever compromise my sleep in order to get this exercise thing done. And that means going to sleep earlier the previous night, if you are too pressed for time that you don't have 3.5 minutes to throw into your morning routine. But if you can, you know, embrace this idea that you can make a big change in your life in a very short time period, that's the teaser, the appeal here. And, you know, when we get up, and our skeleton's been, you know, in a prone position for however many hours, hopefully 8 or more, right? We need to do some housekeeping there. We need to lubricate the joints. We need to get the muscles and everything engaged. So this portion of my course that's called the gentle skeleton setting routine is something that's doable for anyone. Doesn't require any fitness capabilities or whatnot. And on that note, I should mention, like, we want everything to be in this beautiful sweet spot of easy to medium. And maybe if you've done it for a while, then it's like medium to difficult, but never beyond that capability. So in the ebook that I provide with the course, it has my own rep counts and my sequences exactly as I do it, just for reference, or if someone wants to, you know, look at that as an idea. And I do 23 of these. Why 23? And then the next one is 40. And the next one is, these random numbers. And that's because that's where I've identified. I don't want to be like pushing myself over that edge to where this thing is not in that sweet spot, because that might affect things like my motivation or my ability to just have it completely locked into habit, rather than having to question and call up those very fragile resources of motivation, willpower, discipline, focus, because, you know, we're going to be using those throughout the day. And that part's important. So we want to have it comfortable time duration. We want to progress intuitively, naturally, gracefully, like, yeah, I think I'm going to add one other thing. And what I've actually done over the years is I've auditioned new exercises. So I'll see something cool, or I'll get recommended by my high jump coach or whatever to do single leg, elevated leg Bulgarian squats. And I will go and throw those in one day, very few reps, see how it feels. And I'll try it again. It's not an official member of the club yet, because when I make that decision to say, yep, I better start doing these, and it goes into the template, that template is set in stone until further notice. And I'm always negotiating and maybe discarding something that I don't feel as important as maybe a new thing. But the key takeaway here is to do the exact same thing every day, because that's really important to habit forming. You don't want to be applying creative energy to think, oh, what core should I, what core exercise today should I blend with an arm workout? I can choose from the menu and pick from these five. And that might be fun for workout ideas when you go to the club and the teacher's doing something new. Some people recommend changing, you know, muscle confusion was a big term back when. And hey, if you just do the same thing, your body's going to adjust. You're not going to get the same fitness response. Well, that's not untrue in a way, because your body does adapt. Like runners improve their running economy to the extent that running 13 miles for an Olympic runner is not as challenging as it is for the recreational participant. And so they can run more miles and they can run faster, and all that's great. And my routine is pretty difficult by anyone's measure. But for me, because I do it every single day, it's squarely in that medium category. And I don't care that it's getting easier, because we're going to talk in 40 years. I'm going to say, I've been doing this thing every day. I'm in pretty good shape, even though my fitness benefits that escalated when I first started doing it. And boy, does that really make your core muscles burn? That must be good fitness stimulation. And now they don't burn anymore. I'm still doing 40 of these and 20 of those. And so that part, I want to dispel that myth that you constantly need to challenge your body and find new ways to get sore, especially. It's a bad idea. You know, I mean, Jack LaLanne did 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 sit-ups every day. Do you think that he needed to change that up to pursue further fitness goals? I don't think so.
No. I mean, this is a terrible example, but it is real. You'll see folks who have been incarcerated. They're doing the same thing every single day, you know, and it does seem to benefit some folks. And so I don't know, just came out of nowhere of that thought, but it is a thing. It is a thing. And, you know, I think it's just a matter. I think we overcomplicate health. We overcomplicate what we need to do. And there's a lot of noise in the fitness industry, like do this, do that, you know, switch it up, to the point where I think there could be some really serious exhaustion, but also paralyzation for just being like, I'm paralyzed because there's this, but I don't know what set I'm supposed to mix in with that. And is it bad to do shoulder day on the same day you do core day? And if you do, you know, I mean, I've even myself, when writing myself programs or even writing clients programs, I'm going, I'm making this way harder than it needs to be. Way harder.
Yeah. Good point. It's gotta take as minimal, you know, cognitive energy as possible. Just go through the count, do it. And not have it be too difficult, because there's that, what's that thing that kicks in, you know, our subconscious kicks in when you sign up for that 12-week sessions with the trainer and everything's going great for a while, likely because you're bathed in stress hormones from an overly stressful exercise program. And then if you can look back at anything in life that you quit or didn't see through to the end, it was because you're seeking to avoid pain instead. And that's our human nature. So that's really important to have a feeling at the end of something that you're doing that I feel better than when I started. I'm glad I did it. All that great stuff.
Yes. That is the best point to end this podcast on, is feeling better than when you started, because I have so many people that'll come in and be like, I don't really want to start another fitness routine because I felt like crap after it. I was so tired. I couldn't get through the rest of my day, you know, or I laid on the couch the rest of the evening, or I was just so sore. And then of course, is that going to provoke motivation to keep going? Heck no. Cause now the brain's like danger, danger, don't do it. Danger.
Yeah. Big one. I mean, we've been like socialized by the fitness industry that no pain, no gain. And struggle and suffer is the path to the six pack and to be recognized as a fitness freak. And the elite athletes teach us that this is completely ridiculous. They are at such high fitness levels and such genetic attributes that they are well within themselves at every workout. They're not puking on the side of the track like we see in the movies. That's for the movies. And if we can just embrace that idea that a kinder, gentler approach to all manner of fitness goals, and especially with the example that we've been talking about, the morning exercise routine, just do something kind, gentle, and stimulatory where you get the blood flowing, the oxygen delivering, and you definitely feel better after every single time.
Love it. Love it. Brad, thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to dive into more days of the morning routine, because I want to give folks, like, I don't know, by the end of this podcast, folks, I'm going to jump back on and talk about how things have gone for about I'm gonna give it 3 solid weeks on it,
All
and
right.
then we'll put this podcast out so that folks can see kind of what the morning routine is all about, and we can give them a little preview, and then I'll throw some stuff on social too on it so that everyone can see. So folks, if you are interested, head to Brad, KEARNS.com/morning-routine, and you will check out what he's got going on with this amazing morning routine that I'm digging so far. So can't wait to see how it feels here and how I want to talk about the psychology of incorporating it, because my morning usually does start with movement. And so I was like, I want to see what Brad's doing compared to what my movement was, and we'll give you the scoop. So thanks again, Brad. I appreciate you coming back on.
Oh my gosh, what a pleasure always to connect with you, Janine. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll have you back on here soon. So folks, stay tuned for more of Brad.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.